Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sanhedrin Daf Pei Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the Gemara at the top of Pei Vav, we realize that we're in the middle of a discussion concerning kidnapping, which in Torah law, in order to be guilty of a capital offense of kidnapping, one must not only kidnap the individual, but also sell the individual to someone else. In our Mishnah, we saw issues concerning the sale, the kidnapping of somebody, and the subsequent sale of that individual. We also saw a brisa at the bottom of the previous Amid that spoke about the kidnapping, and then the sale of the kidnapped individual to his father. We pick up with that point at the top of Pei Vav Amud Aleph. We notice an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara with a Pei Hei Amud Beis notation under the arrow. That means that you should look back to Pei Hei Amud Beis, and you'll notice at the bottom there is a corresponding arrow at the same side of the page, namely to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, with a Pei Vav notation next to it, under it, and that is at the bottom line of Pei Hei Amud Beis. In other words, the opening comment of the Gemara, Toni Tano Kamei Rav Sheshes, someone stated in front of Rav Sheshes that which it said in the source there at the bottom, namely, that after kidnapping, the kidnapper sold the individual to his father, to the father of the kidnapped individual. Omale, Rav Sheshes, after hearing that, that which it says, Mochar Le'oviv Chayov, that the sale to the father of the victim is considered a full-fledged sale, thereby being Mechayev, the kidnapper, making him guilty of a capital offense, Rav Sheshes reacts, Omar Le, Ani Shoine, I teach the following, Rabbi Shimon Oimer, Me'echov, the Posuk in Devorim, Perichov Dalid, Posuk Zion says, uses the word Me'echov, after the Posuk itself said, and you can see this written into the Gemara on the side of Pei Hei Amud Beis, we have written in there, the Posuk, Ki Motse Ish Gonev Nefesh Me'echov, when there is found a person who steals an individual from Me'echov, from his brethren, Mi B'nei Yisrael. And here, Rabbi Shimon takes that to mean, Me'echov Ad Shiotzi Enu Me'rishus Echov, until he is taken out of brethren's domain. In other words, the sale to the father of the victim is not considered being taken out of his domain, and therefore there should be no culpability. Vi'at Amris Chayav, and you teach the source as saying Chayav. It should be assumed at this point from the fact that Rav Sheshes is reacting the way he does to the teaching, that teaching at the source on Pei Hei Amud Beis is clearly Rav Shimon himself, and you see that Rav Shimon teaches that it would be Potter. Therefore, how can he teach in the source Chayav? So the Gemara responds, you're right, Tani Potter, change the text in the source at the bottom of Pei Hei Amud Beis to read Potter. The Gemara asks, why do you have to change the text? My Kushya, Dilma Ha Rabbi Shimon Ha Rabbonan. Maybe the source at the bottom of Pei Hei Amud Beis that darshaned the Pasuk in Dvorim happens to be the Rabbanon. And Rabbi Shimon here is of a different opinion, which indicates exemption. So to that, the Gemara answers, Lo Sakot Aitoch. You cannot say that the source at the bottom of Pei Hei Mud Beis is someone other than Rabbi Shimon. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Stam Masnisin Rabbi Meir, when you have an unnamed Mishnah, you can assume it's Rabbi Meir. Stam Toisefta Rabbi Nechemya, an unnamed Brisa, you can assume is Rabbi Nechemya. Stam Sifra Rabbi Yehuda, and that the Stam Sifra is the Medrashon Sefer Vayikra, you can assume is Rabbi Yehuda. And this is the important point for us. Stam Sifri. Sifri is that collection of work that Darshans, the Medrashim, that Darshan, the Psukim in the Sefer Dvarim. The pasuk that is featured in the source, in fact, the pasuk of Ki Yimotzei, is from Sefer Dvarim. So when you see an unnamed source darshaning psukim from Sefer Dvarim, that's Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon said, Potter. Fekulu alibud Rabbi Kiva. And all of the aforementioned rabbis are people that teach in the spirit of what Rabbi Kiva, their master, taught. The point being that the source of the previous Amud at the bottom, that Darshan's a posuk in Dvarim, cannot be the Rabbanon, can't be some other Shita other than Rabbi Shimon. It is Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon says that there is no culpability until one takes the, one kidnaps the individual and sells him out of his domain. But selling to one's, to the father of the victim, that's not considered selling out of the domain. And hence, the text should be changed to read Potter. The Mishnah mentioned Hagoinev Beno. That was in our Mishnah on Pei Hei Amud Beis. You notice there were diamonds featuring different sources of different examples of kidnapping. The second diamond was Hagonev Es Beno, one who kidnaps his own son. And we saw Machlokes Tanoim, Rabbi Yishmael holding Chayev, and the Chachamim holding exempt, Potter. My taima de Rabbanan, the Gemara asks, why is it that the Rabbanan hold that there is an exemption if one steals, one kidnaps his own son? Omar Abaye, the Omar Kro, ki yimotzei. The pasuk describes one who happens to chance upon an individual. Prat lemotsui. This is to the exclusion of an individual that is already found in your domain, under your control. And hence, he does stealing one's son doesn't conform to the spirit of the pasuk that says ki motzei, someone that you chance upon. Omar Rav Papa Labaye Elamei Atal. If you're going to explain the word ki motzei as we just did, what about the following pasuk? Ki motzei ish shochev im isha bulas baal. The pasuk refers to an act of intimacy of an immoral nature with a married woman. So are you going to tell me that the prohibition of being with another married woman, hachinami ki motzei prat lemotzui, that since the pasuk uses the word ki motzei, this is to the exclusion of a situation where the party is in your midst already? Well then, you know what's going to come out? The Gemara will describe momentarily some type of household, what maybe we would term it a commune, where a number of married couples dwelt in the same house. So if a man takes a woman from a married woman from one of those other couples in that house, are you going to say there's no guilt? Kigon shel base ploni. The Gemara doesn't elaborate on who the base ploni is, but we just described it. It's some type of, the Rashi points out on the fourth line from the top, shel base ploni lo rotza lahazkir shmom. The Gemara hesitated, didn't want to mention their name, shechashuvin hoyu. In other words, it was some type of important family. Ubozeh lo hoyu noyagin kedos. But in this respect, that they had a number of different married couples sleeping in the same room or the same very close confines is not proper. There were a lot of married couples living together, and men were found with their, were keeping company with, but not of an immoral nature, simply keeping socializing with the wives of their friends. And yachad. In Rashi, if they weren't in private, a man with someone else's married, someone else's wife, but nevertheless, living conditions like that with many married couples living in close confines, and this intimate socializing is not something that the Torah looks upon in a pleasant fashion. But nevertheless, are you going to tell me that since the word kimotsei means something you chance upon, or someone you chance upon, as opposed to someone that's motsui, that's already in your midst, are you going to say, we'll read this line in the Gemara again, kegon shobeis ploni deshchichon gabai hu hochi nami deptiri, since they are common with one another, exemption from the prohibition of Ashes Ish, from intimacy, if it actually happened with another married woman? Of course not. Of course there's no exemption. That would be fully guilty. So what are we going to do as far as the expression ki motzei, or malei? So Abaye says, Ano mi v'nimtza biyodo kwamina. My teaching, my explanation of the Rabbanan, that say that for stealing one's son there is an exemption, I didn't darshan it, I didn't discover that from the expression ki motzei, but rather from the expression v'nimtza biyado. Rashi points out on the upper part of the narrow lines, v'nimtza kro yaseirahu, it's an extra expression, de'i l'lam de lamed shi motzei ba'edim, if you were to think that the pasuk is saying that it should be ascertained by witnesses, that ki yimtza nafka, I could learn that from the expression ki yimtza, that it is found through testimony. So what does the expression v'nimtza biyado do? It comes to exclude a case of one who steals or kidnaps his own son. Amar Rava, hilkach, as a result of our discussion, hani mikri dardiki umasnu rabbanan, people who are instructors of children or teach Torah to other people, Mastats Masnu Rabbanan, they teach older students Torah, Kimitsuyin Biodon Damu, they are considered in their midst already, and therefore if the teacher would kidnap one of those students, Uptiri, he would be exempt. In other words, Abaye is sticking to his original teaching of prat lemotsui. However, he doesn't darshan the prat lemotsui from the expression ki motzei, because that would have led to an incorrect understanding in the topic of eishes ish that the Gemara featured, but rather he learns his point of prat lemotsui, excluding that which is commonly found in your domain, from the expression v'nimtza biyado. The original halacha of Abaye, or the original explanation, stands that those who are commonly found in your midst create an exemption in the case of kidnapping. Hence, if you have an educational setup where you have a teacher and students there, since the students are motsui, are commonly found in the presence of that teacher, if that teacher were to kidnap one of the students, that would be potter. It would not be considered a violation of the Torah's perception of goynev nefashos. Gonav mi shechetzoy v'chulei, and then we saw Rabbi Yehuda Mechayev and the Chacham Apotrim. This, the Mishnah featured the theft or the kidnapping of an individual that's half free and half slave. Before we go on, the topic heading that we've assigned to this Gemara is featured on the side, Nosei Mivneh. The Nosei, the topic, Mivneh, the structural note. Because as you scan along in the Gemara, you'll notice we present a couple of diamonds with colored in tips. On the side, we see the diamond featured, Shnei Nosim, two topics, Boishes Ugenevas Nefesh. Boishes is the causing of embarrassment to somebody, and Genevas Nefesh, kidnapping. Rabbi Yehuda v'Chomim Cholkin, we find that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chomim argue, Be'inyin Avodim, regarding the issue of slaves, ubishnei hanoisim nitan lidroish achiv. In both of the cases, we have the word achiv that appears. Ubiur machlokes tanoim begonav es mi shechetzio eved v'chetzio bechor. And also, we will be explaining the Tanaic controversy concerning the kidnapping of someone who is half slave, half free. The Gemara here opens up with the issue of boshes, of embarrassment, in the context of slaves. before beginning this, let us just note that in general, when someone causes damage to someone else, and their part of the damage to the individual results in his feeling shame or appearing different and thereby suffering embarrassment, there's a special payment or an additional payment that's made for boishes, embarrassment. The Gemara continues, Tanan Hosam, the Mishnah teaches, Reb Yehuda Omer, Ein Lavodim Boishes. The payment of boishes, if in the case of someone who causes damage to a slave, the payment of boishes is not made. My time at the Reb Yehuda, what's the basis of saying that? Oh, the Omer Kra, the Pasuk says in the context of boishes, in the Pasuk that deals with that payment, it says, Ki inotsu anoshim yachtov, ish v'achiv. When two people are fighting with one another, and it says in the pasuk uses the expression ish v'achiv, and the Chazal Reb Yehuda darshens this as follows: Mishiyesh loy achva. When is their boshes paid? For someone who has brotherhood, the relationship of brotherhood exists. Yotza eved she'ein lo achva, to the exclusion of a slave where there is no brotherhood. The Rashi says, "Eved shein lo achva v'afilu im ochiv b'nei oviv," a slave who happens to have been born from a particular man, a father, the slave's father, and he has a couple of sons. Those other sons of the father are not considered brothers. The slaves, are not considered brothers to one another. And we're talking in legal terms. We're not talking in terms of biology. But in the terms of the halachic concept of brotherhood, they do not have it. And the Rashi explains that it's based on a drosha of the pasuk im hachamor, am hadoim lechamor, eino elo kebehema. Continuing in the Gemara, v'rabbonan, rabbonan who say that there is a payment of boshes made to avodim, that even though with regard to certain aspects there is no brotherhood, nevertheless, Ochiv hu b'mitzvos. If a Jew causes boshes to an eved, he is considered causing embarrassment to someone who could be classified as echov. In what sense? There is commonality in terms of mitzvah fulfillment. In other words, the eved also is like a regular Jew with regard to certain types of mitzvahs. So since they have that in common, he's considered ochiv, he's considered his brother with regard to mitzvah performance. That is as far as the topic of boshes is concerned. V'hocha hechi dorish. Here, in the case of kidnapping, where the word me echov also appears, the word of brotherhood appears in the context of kidnapping, what do they darshan? Rabbi Huda Sofar, me echov, he looks at the word in Devarim, Pasuk Chav Dalet, Pasuk Zayin, and says that that word, me echov lafuke avodim, comes to exclude slaves. There's another word that appears in that pasuk, Bnei Yisrael. And you can, by quick reference back to Pehei Mud Beis on the side of the Gemara, you can see where we wrote in the pasuk. The pasuk had said, Ki motzei ish gonev nefesh me echov mi Bnei Yisrael. So, focusing on the word Bnei Yisrael, that is limuti mi shechetzio eved v'chetzio ben chorin. That would exclude someone who's half slave, half free. The pasuk adds a mem to the word b'nei. It says, mi b'nei. We're darshaning the mem on its own. And that does, what is its function? L'mute mi shechetzio eved v'chetzio ben chorin. Well, exactly the same thing as the basic b'nei Yisrael did, just the line above. Notice where the one is, and now you see where the two is. They are excluding the same thing. So there's a double exclusion. What does that do as far as the halacha is concerned? Have a miut achar miut. It's considered an exclusion following an exclusion. The ein miut achar miut elo l'rabbis. When you have a situation like that of a double minus, it equals a plus. And as a result of that, Rabbi Yehuda would say that the theft of a chatzi eved, chatzi mechorin, the kidnapping of such an individual, would result in a chiyuv, in culpability. Rabbanan, how do they approach this? Notice what we've done with our markings. We've squiggled underline Rabbanan and Rabbi Yehuda so you can keep track of what each one holds. The Rabbanan look at the same pasuk and they say, me'echov lafuke avodim loy mashmalahu. Notice with the reading, we had to read all those words together, and we assist in the reading by adding the connector marking, the little loop connecting the different words, where if those markings weren't there, one might have had a tendency to stop prematurely. The Rabbanan are saying that looking at the word me'achov to exclude avonim, that we wouldn't do. And why is that? Ha'achiv hu b'mitzvos. And Eved, according to the Rabbanan, as we saw before, he's considered our brother with regard to mitzvah performance. As we mentioned earlier, slaves are obligated in the mitzvahs that a woman is obligated in. This Rashi points out, based on a gzeres hakosa, based on a word comparison of law. The word law appears in the context of avodim as well as in the context of women. So we say that slaves are obligated in mitzvahs like women. So in that sense, the eved is already ochiv with regard to mitzvahs. So he doesn't. The Rabbanan say that the word me'echov will not exclude avonim from this parsha. Bnei Yisrael, mi bnei Yisrael. There are two words. Each one is exclusive. Bnei Yisrael comes to exclude someone else, and the mem also is exclusive. So what do they do? The Rabbanan say chad limutei eved. In fact, we will exclude eved, but not from the word me'echov. Because as far as Echov is concerned, we said they are Echov. So we can't exclude them. They are Echov with regard to mitzvah performance. However, since we have these additional words, Bnei Yisrael, that is what excludes Eved from the parsha of kidnapping. And V'chad, the additional mem, Limutei mi shechetsu Eved v'chetsu menchorin, one who would kidnap a half-slave, half-free man, that two is not going to be guilty. That is excluded from the parsha as well. So you see that the Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim argue with regard to the kidnapping of a chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin, where Rabbi Yehuda says because of the miut achar miut, one will be chayev, and the Rabbanan hold chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin, if kidnapped, does not result in guilt, rather potter. Azhora legoinev nefesh minayin. In order, as we've said on many occasions on previous shiurim, in order to carry out a Torah-ordained punishment, there has to be an additional pasuk, not only the pasuk indicating the type of punishment for the particular offense, but also an azhora pasuk, a pasuk which features a negative commandment regarding that very topic. So the Gemara is looking for where is the azhora, where is it that the Torah warns against kidnapping? Rabbi Yoshia Omar, Miloi Signo, from the pasuk that's found in the Ten Commandments. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Milo Yimkuru Mimkoras Eved. It's a different pasuk, but the Gemara points out, Velo Pligi, in fact there's no argument between Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yochanan. Mor Kochoshiv Lav de Geneva, Omar Kochoshiv Lav de Mechira. One is considering the Lav, the Azhara, against the Geneva aspect of kidnapping, and Rabbi Yochanan is considering the sale aspect. As we know already, when it comes to the prohibition of kidnapping, it's not merely the taking of the individual from wherever he's found, but it's also the subsequent sale of that individual's Geneva Umechira is what activates the death penalty. So we have two psukim, one warning, one serving as an azhora for the Geneva aspect, and the other pasuk, Rabbi Yochanan's pasuk, serving as the azhora regarding the Mechira aspect. Before we go further in the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, written on the side. Number one, loy signov, the aseres hadibros equals Genevas nefashos. And number two, lo signovu, the parshas kedoshim, there's another pasuk indicating lo signovu, and that's found in Sefer Vayikra, parshas kedoshim, that's genevas mamon, that's theft of money. So as you can see, as you look ahead in the Gemara, we have two Tanaic sources. You see these two framed sections. The first one opens up with the Pasuk in the Ten Commandments in Shmos Perek Chav, Pasuk Yud Gimel Lo Signoiv. And the second Brisa, you can see, the second framed source, it opens up with the Pasuk in Vayikra, Pasuk Yud Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yudav Lo Signoivu. The first one, the Pasuk from Ten Commandments, refers to kidnapping, and the second one refers to theft of money, financial theft. Let us continue in the Gemara. Lo signov. Begoinev nefashos akosu medaber. So the Bryce informs us that that pasuk is referring to kidnapping. Atoim begoinev nefashos o eino elo begoinev mamon. Are you to tell me that it's kidnapping? Or maybe, notice we've squiggle underlined o eino elo. In our marking system, we often use the squiggle underline to denote a transition and an alternative. So here the Bryce is proposing an alternative. Maybe it doesn't mean kidnapping. O eino elo begonev mamon. Maybe the pasuk is referring to financial theft. So how do we resolve this? Amris, answer, say ulamag mishlosh esrei midos shatayur nedreshes bohen. Let us determine that which is unknown through a method of resolution, one of the 13 different principles of Torah exposition. And what is the principle we're going to take advantage of or activate? Dovar halomeit minyano. An issue, an item, learned from context. Bamei hakosuv medaber. What is the context of this pasuk that's found in the Aseres HaDibros? Benefashos. It's dealing with matters of life, of human beings. The Rashi points out, you'll notice there's a double asterisk here, and if you find a little house marking in a house form in the Rashi with a double star next to it, we glance over there, that the Rashi at that point is saying that the whole topic is benefashos. It's the topic is talking about lo sirtzach, thou shalt not murder, lo sinaf, not thou shalt not behave immorally, kol ela chayve mises bezdin. They are all capital offenses. And we know that standard monetary theft is not a capital offense because it's something that can be repaid. Therefore, the other psukim in the context of lo signov are offenses of a capital nature, murder and immorality. Af lo signov b'geneva sheyesh bo misas beisin. So too the lo signov that's featured in the Aseres HaDibros must be some kind of theft accompanying it would be misas beisin, a death penalty. That's called learning from the context. And the Brisa concludes af kan b'nefasha. So too over here our lo signov pasuk is also a theft involving a capital offense, and that certainly is not a case of financial theft. As we said before, financial theft is atoned for by simply returning that which was stolen. Tanyo idoch. We have another source, lo signovu. The posuk in Parshas Kedoshim, Perek Yud Tes, Posuk Yud Aleph, Begoinev Momoin Hakosuf Medaber. The Torah is talking about financial theft. Ata Omer Begoinev Momoin Eino Elo Begoinev Nefashos. Are you to tell me that it means money theft or Eino Elo? Notice we squiggle underline this again. This is where the alternative is presented. Maybe it's Begoinev Nefashos. Amris, we answered, Sei ulamad mishlosh esrei midos shatoyro nedreshes b'hem. Let us learn from one of the 13 principles used for expounding the Torah. Dovar halomeid minyono. That's learn from context. Bamei hakosuv medaber. What is the context of that pasuk? B'momon. The pasuk in that vicinity, there's a pasuk Yud Gimel in Vayikra Yud Tes, talks about not withholding pay from workers. Lo sa'ashoik esre'echo, the pasuk says. So you see that the context of the pasuk in Sefer Vayikra, lo signovu, is in the context of money matters. Afkan, so too, this very pasuk of lo signovu is bimomon, is a money issue. As we go on in the Gemara, before we continue, we notice there is a slash mark that appears at the end of this line, indicating that that which follows is of a totally new nature. We will be seeing several different geometric forms as we move on in the Gemara. The first one, a triangle, and on the side, we have an osei mivneh heading. We feature on the side, deos, opinions, be'inyan, edei, mechira, benefesh, shuhuzmu. We've also added a double underline, because as we go on in the Gemara, we will see in different contexts, on different occasions, as we go through Amud Beis, the Gemara will be making reference to Eidei Mechira, the witnesses that testify that the kidnapped victim was also sold, and the Gemara will be discussing those witnesses, the witnesses of that saw the sale, that eventually shehuzmu, that were shown to be liars. In other words, there never was a sale, based on, of course, their testimony, because their testimony was a lie. What type of lie? Huzmu is a reference to Hazoma, where the subsequent witnesses come in and say, how could you guys have testified when on that day that a sale took place when you were with us in a different location at that very same time? We will also be featuring a house marking as we go along, and the house marking will be taking assuming different positions as we go along to enable us to follow the flow of the Gemara. Here we've noted Hashva'o li'edim ve'edusam b'ben soro mora. We will be attempting to compare the topic of kidnapping to the topic of witnesses that testify in the context of the ben soro mora, the wayward son, the fellow who steals money from his parents and to buy meat and wine. We also have a Roman numeral number 1. We will eventually want to compare that which is said over here with what we see on Amud Beis. There is a Roman numeral 2 about a quarter, third of the way down the Amud, and you can see just by scanning down the right-hand side of the Gemara text where that appears. At that point, the Gemara will be presenting a different version of what we're going to be seeing now as we open up the Gemara. Let us now continue. Itmar, Eidei Geneva, V'Eidei Mechira Benefesh, Shehuzmu. Two sets of witnesses come in. One set testifies about a theft, a kidnapping, and the other testify about the victim being sold. And then these witnesses are found to be liars, because others come in and testify regarding these first two sets. How could they say what they did? They were with us at the time they're saying that events took place in another location. Let us glance at Rashi before we go further in the Gemara. Eidei Geneva ve'Eidei Mechira, Shnei Kitei Eidim, two sets of witnesses, Achas He'ido Shegonav Es HaNefesh, one set testifies that so-and-so kidnapped, V'Achas He'ido Shemochar, and the other set testifies that he sold the victim. Ein Neherogin, these witnesses, even though they're testifying about a case that has capital ramifications, there's a death penalty that's involved in kidnapping. Nevertheless, and before we go on, let's just remind ourselves that when you're dealing with Edim Zomimim, the witnesses, the first witnesses that are found to be lying, the principle says that which they were trying to do, to testify and accomplish in their testimony concerning the victim, they are to receive. We might add that on a judicial procedural level, this is true when the original defendant was actually sentenced. There was a Gemar Din based on the original testimony. And after the Gemar Din, before the actual execution takes place, the witnesses were found to be Edim Zomimim. So if you're at a point in the judicial procedure that the Gemar Din took place based on their testimony, and then it's discovered that they are lying through Hazoma, by proving by the testimony that they were somewhere else at the time they testified that the event took place, they get what they tried to do to the defendant. So the Rashi that we're looking at, Eidei Geneva ve'Eidei Mechira, we mentioned there are two sets of witnesses, one testifying about the theft, one testifying about the sale. Ein Herogin, Kinemaforish time of Azul, as the Gemara will explain, the cave of the Inhu lo Miktali, since the witnesses themselves are not subject to being killed. This particular scenario, we have one set of witnesses concerning the theft and the kidnapping, that is, and a second set concerning the sale. Since they are not to be killed, Ihu Nami Imlohuzmu lo Miktil, the defendant as well would not be subject to a death penalty. Namely, even if they are not found to be lying, even if their original testimony stands, two guys testify that there was a kidnapping, that so-and-so did a kidnapping, and two others testify that he carried out a sale, the defendant will not be put to death. We have a situation which we haven't described yet why it is, but we have a situation of testimony that we cannot carry out the principle of hazama on the witnesses. The principle of hazama states they get what they were trying to do, and since they won't be punished with death. Therefore, the defendant also cannot be, it's called edu shiatoch lazimo, and it's not considered a binding testimony. V'lo mishkachas lo demikto elo bekas achas shemi'idim al hagneva v'al hamechira. We don't find a scenario where a defendant on the grounds of kidnapping could ever be put to death unless it's one set of witnesses that testifies both about the kidnapping and the sale. We still haven't gotten to the heart of the matter. Why is it that if they are two separate sets of witnesses, one on the Gneva and the other on the Mechira, why is this not going to be a capital case? Let's continue in the Gemara. So if you have that situation, the Eide Gneva and the Eide Mechira B'Nefesh Shehuzmu, Chizkia Omar Ein Neherogin. According to Chizkia, as we have explained till now, they will not be subject to death, even though they originally testified concerning a matter that has a capital ramifications. They cannot be put to death when they are found to be lying. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Neherogin. They can be. Chizkia Omar, Rabbi Kiva. Chizkia bases his opinion on Rabbi Kiva to Omar. Dovar. Dovar is a quote from a pasuk that says elsewhere. It says Al pi shnayim edim o shlosha edim yakum dovar. Rashi quotes it here. Al pi shnayim edim yakum dovar. Dovar means based on the testimony of two witnesses, a dovar, an element or a topic is established. But whatever is being established has to be a complete legal entity. V'lo chatzi davar, not half a matter. V'Rabbi Yochanan Amar k'Rabbanan. The Rabbanan, the Rabbi Yochanan, who says that the Eidei Geneva and Eidei Mechira that are found to be Zomim can be put to death, that even though each set testified about half an item, what do we mean by half an item? For kidnapping, we said in order to violate the Torah version of kidnapping, one has to do two acts. Geneva, the actual kidnapping of the individual, the theft of the individual, and a subsequent sale of the individual. So there are two elements. According to the way we are looking at things, each element on its own is called a chatzi davar. Is that considered a unit of testimony or not? According to Chizkia, we say it's not. It's called a chatzi davar. And based on Rabbi Kiva's approach, it's not considered a full unit of testimony. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, holds like the Rabbanan that say davar, that when the Torah says yakum davar, it means v'afilu chatzi davar. To appreciate this topic a little bit more, let us take a look at the Rashi, Plukto de Rabbi Kiva Rabbanan. B'bava Vaser, b'cheses abatim, in the Maseches Bava Basra, it says in Perek Cheskes Abatim, al pi shnayim edim yokum davar, v'lo chatzi davar, and not half a thing. V'hai chatzi davar hu, etzel kol kas v'kas. When you have these two sets of witnesses, we are dealing with half ideas. What do we mean by half ideas when we speak about the theft and we talk about the subsequent sale? The ilav edei geneva, if you didn't have witnesses concerning the kidnapping, eino neherag mishum edei mechira, the defendant could not be put to death because it was testified that he sold somebody. Why? Sheyochol amar, he can always say, yes, I agree, I did sell somebody, but avdi mochati, the person I sold was my slave. Ve'ilav mechira nami, and if I don't have witnesses testifying about the sale, I have witnesses, let's say that so-and-so kidnapped someone, but I don't have anything about the sale. Lo mechayev ageneva. There would be no guilt for the actual, there's no punishment for the actual kidnapping of the individual if there is no subsequent sale. So each element on its own, as we just described through the Rashi, is considered a chatzi davar. And as a result of that, according to Rabbi Yochanan, according to Chizkiah, a nerogin, we can't put them to death because each witness, each set of witnesses testified about a partial matter. It may be understood that if you view, as Chizkiah does, based on Rabbi Akiva, it's a type of testimony that doesn't hold any water, because it's not a dover sholem, it's not a complete unit of information. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan, who holds like the Rabbanan, that say, dover v'achilu chatzi dover, we can accept the testimony concerning partial pieces of information. Continuing in the Gemara, Umoide Chizkiah, Be'edim ho'achroinim shel bensor more. In order for a wayward son, the bensor more, to eventually be condemned to death, there has to be, it's a several stage process. The first stage, after there's testimony that he stole and bought, he stole money and bought meat and wine, as soon as you have the first testimony concerning that topic, that issue, he is lashed. The young man, the boy between 13 and 3 months, that's the age time during which he can become a Ben Soromore. Upon the first testimony, what did we say? We say that he's lashed. If he does it again, and there's a testimony to the effect that he did it again, only then is he put to death. What is the Gemara saying now? Chizkiah, who above held that testimony has to be of a dover nature, a complete nature, not a chatzi dover. The Edim Achronim, the second set of witnesses that comes to testify about the Bensor More, after he was already lashed based on the testimony of the first set, when these second set of witnesses come in, they're coming in for the purpose of condemning the Bensor More to death. Chizkiah is mode that Edim Achronim the Bensor More, Shehuzmu, that are found themselves to be liars, Shineherogin, they themselves will be put to death. Unlike the case of the Edim Mechira Benefesh, where Chizkiah said there is no death for them. Now, why is that? The answer is explained by the Gemara. Mitoch Shiacholim Lomo Harishona, because the first set of witnesses can say, our role was Lahalkoisoi Bono. We came when our testimony to see to it that he would get lashed. Vehani achrini kuli dovar ko avdilei. The second set of witnesses are doing a complete entity, a complete testimony, a testimony of a capital nature. Rashi explains a little bit further. Since after the testimony of the first witnesses, there was an onesh, a punishment was carried out, namely the lashing was carried out. They accomplished what they had to do, and they are now not in the picture anymore. Therefore, when the second set of witnesses come in, they are coming in to accomplish something of a new nature, namely a capital offense testimony. And hence, it's called a dovar sholem, a complete unit of testimony. And therefore, Rabbi even Chizkiah will agree that if that second set of witnesses who testify about the subsequent sale of theft of money and purchase of meat and wine, if they are found to be liars, they will be put to death. Rav Popa now raises a question. The question itself is a long question, as you can see from the length marker. You'll see a kuf to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text that's encircled with a vertical dashed line indicating the length of the question. All of these lines are dedicated to Rav Popa's question. As we get toward the end of the question, we will notice a bracketed section. That bracketed section is marked off thusly to indicate that the basic question really ends before the brackets. The information within the brackets simply gives basis for whatever was said beforehand. It adds background to it, but the basic question is really asked before you get to that bracketed section. Maskif lo Rav Papa, ihachi, if this be the case, that the Edim HaAchronim of the Ben Sor Moreh are considered a Dovar Shalem, because they are coming to, the first witnesses came to testify about essentially lashing, that he deserves lashing, and they accomplished what they were supposed to do, and they're out of the picture. So based on that logic, Maskif lo Rav Papa, ihachi, Eidei Mechira Nami Liktalu. Why don't we say that the, and of course we're going within Chizkiyah, why doesn't he say that the witnesses that testify in the case of kidnapping, and they are found to be Zoymimim, why are, is it that they are not put to death? Mitoch Shiyacholim Eide Gineva Lomar, the first witnesses that came to tell us about the initial kidnapping, they could tell us, Lahalkoisoi Banu, we came to testify about his act of kidnapping in order for the kidnapper to receive Malkus for having kidnapped, having taken someone from his home. And we, the first witnesses, would say, we only knew about a kidnapping. We didn't know about any subsequent sale. V'chitema d'kosover chizkiya d'lo loki. You might want to argue that chizkiya holds that the Eide Geneva, those witnesses that testify about the theft, are not subject to lashing. And why would it be that they're not subject to lashing? So Rashi points out on the second line from the top, the lo loki agineva l'chuda mishum dehavi le lav shenitan lazoros misas beisin, because it's a negative commandment that has a potential for a death penalty. Sheim yimkarenu, if it would come out that after the kidnapping the victim is sold, yehareg, the kidnapper would be put to death. So you might want to say, as, and this is a very prominent rule, that those kinds of offenses that have a potential for a death penalty to be carried out, lashing cannot be given. So you might say that Chizkiyah holds that the Eide Geneva are not lashed. And if that be the case, they could not say, we came to testify that he should get lashed. But that's not true. It's not true that Chizkiyah holds the lo loki v'ho itmar. It has been said, Eide Geneva benefesh shehuzmu. If you have witnesses that testify about a kidnapping, and they are found to be liars, Chizkiyah v'Rabbi Yochanan, chad omar loikin v'chad omar ein loikin. One of them says there is Malkus, and the other one says there is not. V'amrinon, and we say, Tistayim v'Chizkiyah d'yomar loikin. Let us conclude that Chizkiyah is the one that says that the Eide Geneva are subject to Malkus. Now, how do I know they're subject to Malkus? Mida Omer Chizkiyah Ein Herogin, from that which we saw already on Omid Aleph, and you can find it by looking for the asterisk, just like we have an asterisk here to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Omid Aleph. You'll see on Omid Aleph, if you look back, a corresponding asterisk indicating Omid Beis, at which point the Gemara said that according to Chizkiyah, the Eide Geneva are not put to death. Being that they're not put to death, in the case, of course, that they're found to be lying, that shows us that it's edus, that's not nitan lazoros misas beisdin. It's a type of testimony that does not have a capital possibility attached to it. That being the case, since it doesn't have a capital punishment attached to it, you could carry out the malchus. Therefore, so far, what are we asking? According to what we said before about the Ben Sor Moreh, since the first witnesses can say, we came to see that there should be lashing, so too in the case of kidnapping. Why is it that the Eide Mechira are not subject to a death penalty when they're found to be Zomimim? The first witnesses, the ones who testified about the kidnap, could come along and say, we testified in order to see that there is lashing, and we have accomplished that.
they are then out of the picture, so that the Eidei Mechira would be a Dovar Shalem. So why wouldn't Chizkiyah concede that the Eidei Mechira, if they are found to be lying, should be subject to the death penalty? As we mentioned before, the basic question has been asked already. Within the brackets, we have a note on the side, Matras HaSograim, L'Hakel Al HaKriya. The purpose of these bracketed lines is to make the reading easier. L'Haros, to show, She'ikr HaKusha Histayim. The basic question has already been, has ended. Histayim Lifnehem, the basic question ended before these brackets. Umashe B'socham Havei Havhoras Dvorim. That which is found in the brackets is simply clarification of that which we have said. So we continue in the Gemara. As far as we had, just two lines up, we had Chad Omar Loikin and Chad Omar Ein Loikin regarding the Eidei Geneva Benefesh, regarding those witnesses that testify about the initial stealing or kidnapping of the victim. Who says what? Who says Loikin and who says Ein Loikin? We concluded that it's Chizkiyah that says that if they're found to be Zoymimim, they would get Malkus. D'i Rabbi Yochanan, because if you were to think that it's Rabbi Yochanan that holds that way, that's not true. Kevan di Omar Neherogin, since Rabbi Yochanan said that Eidei Geneva that are found to be Zoymimim are Neherogin, have a lay, the issue of the theft itself, the kidnapping itself, is a lav shenitam lazoras misas based in. It's a negative command that has a capital punishment attached to it. The whole lav shenitam lazoras misas based in Ein Loikin Olav. Ihu lo loki. The thief, the one who does the kidnapping itself, does not get Malkus, because he could eventually be prosecuted on a capital level. Inhu hechi loku. How could the witnesses therefore be lashed? If the victim himself, if the defendant himself can't be lashed, so the witnesses, when they're found to be Zomimim, they cannot be lashed either. And that's all Shitas Rabbi Yochanan, that Eidei Geneva Shehuzmu are subject to the Dine Hazama, are subject to being put to death. Therefore, Chizkiyah is the one that would say Eidei Geneva are Loke, because they are not to be put to death. That having been said, since they are Loke, the Eidei Geneva, why is it that the Eidei Mechira, if they're found to be Zomimim, why is it that that's considered, according to Chizkiyah, only a Chatzi Dovar? It's really a Dovar Shalem, being that the Eidei Geneva are out of the picture. Elo Amarav Papa. So we have now a restatement of this whole approach. Rav Papa says, the Eidei Mechira, the Kule Alma lo pligi de Neherogin. Even Chizkiyah will agree that if they are found to be Zomimim, those witnesses that testified concerning the sale of the kidnapped victim, if there was a Gemar Din, if there was a verdict rendered after they testified that so and so sold the kidnapped victim, if there was a verdict concerning the original defendant, and then the Eidei Mechir are found to be liars through Hazama, they will be put to death according to all opinions. And why is that? Because it's a Dovar Sholem. Ki Pligi, the whole machlokis that exists between Chizkiyah and Rabbi Yochanan, is B'Eidei Geneva, concerns the witnesses that testified about the initial theft. Chizkiyah Omar Ein Neherogin. Chizkiyah says that they are not subject to being put to death. Geneva lechudo kaimo, umechira lechudo kaimo. The act of theft is a separate unit of information, and the act of the sale is a separate unit of information. Rabbi Yochanan Omar neherogin. They could be subject to being put to death, the Eidei Geneva, because Geneva aschalto de mechirohi. The theft is the beginning of the sale. It's the beginning. It's a necessary beginning for the eventual sale, which results in a capital offense. Hence, they being part of the beginning of testimony that leads to a capital offense, if they are found to be liars, they can be put to death. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Lechudo kaima. This was as far as Chizkiyah is concerned. V'eide geneva, einon boyin lahargo el hakoso. The witnesses that came to testify about the initial theft were coming with the intention of seeing to it that the defendant gets lashed. Aval eide mechira sheboyin imohin. However, the witnesses of the sale that come along with the witnesses of the theft, v'omrim shehisrubo lemisa, and they tell us that before he sold the victim, we warned him that he would be subject to a death penalty. Moinin oisoi mi malchus. They prevent him from getting malchus. Umechayven oso misa. Vahavilo mechira davar shalem. And as a result of this analysis, the mechira is a complete entity. The next Rashi, aschalta de mechira. This was Rabbi Yochanan's opinion that the Eide Geneva, when they are found to be liars, and of course there had been testimony by other witnesses concerning the Mechira, and they were found to be Zoymimim, so the Eide Geneva are subject to being put to death. The Kosovar Rabbi Yochanan, lo loki Allah. There is no Malkus for the initial testimony of Geneva. The Lav Shinitan Azor's Misa is based in. It's a negative commandment that has a potential death penalty. The Einon Boyan El Elahargo. These first witnesses are coming with the intent to see that the defendant is killed. The Afagav Dishtein Srichozulazu, even though the two sets of witnesses need each other. The Have Le Kol Chado V'Chado Chatzidover, and each set on its own is a half unit of information. That doesn't bother Rabbi Yochanan because Miktal, he's put to death, Kirabonan, based on the Rabbonan that hold that when the Torah says Al Pishnaim Edim Yokum Dovar, that Dovar can also be a Chatzi Dovar. Continuing in the Gemara, Umoide Rabbi Yochanan, notice with our markings we have an inverted house marking. The first time we saw the expression Umoide, it was Chizkiah being Mode. Chizkiah, who was of the opinion that when you have a half unit of information, so it's not accepted, and he was then Mode to the case of Ben Sor Mora, where what might have been taken as a half unit is even Chizkiah's Mode is a complete unit. Here you have Rabbi Yochanan now being Moda in the other direction. Rabbi Yochanan, whose basic opinion is that half units are considered binding anyway. Here he will be Moda to the other side. Umoda Rabbi Yochanan, the Eidim Horishonim Shel Ben Sor Mora Shehuzmu She'ein Neharogin. Rabbi Yochanan will concede that the initial witnesses, in the case of the wayward son, if they are found to be Zomimim, they will not be put to death. Mitoch shi'cholim loymar lahalkoisoi bono, because they could have come and said, "We came to see to it that the boy gets lashed." And the pasuk itself talks about that. That at that first stage, the first theft, and if the testimony concerning the theft of money and purchase of wine and meat, their whole purpose is to see to it that there is malchus. Therefore, if eventually he's found to be a Ben Sor Mora because a second set of witnesses comes in and testifies that he did it again, and he eventually the boy could eventually be put to death, nevertheless, if they are found to be Zomimim, those first witnesses were not coming in the first place to see to it that the boy is put to death. They were coming to give Malkus. Therefore, when they are found to be Zomimim, they themselves will get Malkus. At this point in the Gemara, we have a long point marking. You can see the nun that appears to the right-hand side of the Gemara text. It's encircled with a vertical dashed line. We have a topic heading on the side, the nose, Eide Ben Sor Mora Shehuzmu. Witnesses concerning the wayward son that are found to be liars through the Zomimim process. Dinim Chalukim Lishlovim Shoinim Shel Ha'edus. You will see differences in law regarding the different stages of the testimony. Abaye opens up stating three headlines, and after which the Gemara will explain each one of those. And we will see in the Gemara some diamonds that enclose letters indicating 3 points that Abai will make, and then afterwards 3 diamonds appear in the Gemara text featuring each one of these points and explaining them. Omar Abaye, Hakol Moedim Beben Soromore, V'Hakol Moedim Beben Soromore. He says twice that everyone is in agreement regarding the issue of the Ben Soromore. U'machloikes Beben Soromore. That's rather obscure. Let us now explain. Hakol Moedim Beben Soromore, B'Edim Harishonim. Everyone will agree concerning the first set of witnesses that come to testify about the Ben Soromore, She'ein Neherogin, that they, if they are found to be liars, they will not get they will not be put to death. Mitoch Shicholim Lomar, because they can claim that when we came in to testify initially, Lahal Koisabana, we came to testify testimony that would have led to his getting lashed. And as far as the principle is concerned, that Kasher Zaman, whatever they tried to do, they get. What were they trying to do? So they were trying to see to it that the defendant gets Malchus, and when they're found to be liars, they would get the lashing. V'hakol moedim b'ben soromura. Everyone is in agreement about another aspect of Ben Soromora, be'edim achronim, sheneherogin. What happens with regard to the second set of witnesses concerning the second stage of testimony of the Ben Soromora, when they are found to be lying, those witnesses who lied will be put to death. Mitoch she'edim horishonim yecholim lomar, because the first set of witnesses, they can disconnect themselves from the whole capital element, because they can say, we came to testify about an act of deserving lashing. Vehani, the second set of witnesses that came in to testify about the subsequent theft and purchase of meat and wine, theft of money and purchase with the money of meat and wine, vehani kulei dovor ko avdilei, they are testifying about a complete new entity. In other words, that second act is an act that has as its punishment something else, namely death. Umachlikis Ben Soromora. This was the third point that Abaye made. There's a controversy there regarding the Ben Soromora. Shnayim oimim b'faninu gonav. If 2 witnesses come and say, we saw him steal the money, and 2 other witnesses come and say, it was in front of us that he ate. The stealing of the money is not enough to mechayev to condemn the Ben Soromora. He has to steal the money, and then with the money, buy meat and wine and eat it. So each aspect of this testimony is a chatzi davar. It's true that if you combine these 2 halves, the boy will be put to death. However, do we say that? Do we combine these 2 half pieces of information? So according to Chizkiah, who learned like Rabbi Kiva, that's called a chatzi davar, and it doesn't constitute a unit of testimony. And Rabbi Yochanan, who held like the Rabbanan, that a chatzi davar is also considered legitimate testimony, it would have led to the death of the Ben Soromora, and hence if they're found to be lying, they too can be put to death. Let us take a look at Rashi. Ushnaim omer befaninu ochal habosar birshus achirim, and 2 second witnesses testify that he ate the meat in someone else's domain other than his father's. De'eno chayav ad yignov mishalo v'yochal birshus achirim. This is just background for the dinim of Ben Soromora. Hanoch shtei kitos tzrichozulazu. These 2 sets of witnesses need each other in order to complete the picture. Ve'ein horishonim yicholim lomar l'halkosavanu. The 1st witnesses cannot divorce themselves from the capital element and say, we came simply to testify that he should get Malchus. Ve'have lei chatzi davar. And as a result of their inability to say, we came to see to it that he gets lashing, what they are doing is really only a chatzi davar. The chizkiyah of the several like Rabbi Kiva, the Amar ein neharogin, with Rabbi Yochanan, the Amar neharogin, kirabonan. Continuing in the Gemara, Amar of Asi, Eide mechira benefesh shehuzmu. It is important for us to emphasize this is a case where you did not have witnesses concerning the actual kidnapping. Rashi says, "V'lo bo eide genevo al kach lifonenu." So you have two witnesses that come and say, we saw so-and-so selling a person. And we emphasize again, there were no previous witnesses saying that the person being sold now was the victim of a kidnapping. And these witnesses that say they saw a sale are then found to be liars, shuhuzmu, the Gemara goes on, ein neherogin. They're not put to death. Why? Mitoch shiyocho lomar, since the defendant has a way out. He could say, sure I sold so-and-so, avdi mocharti, the person I sold was my slave. Omar Rav Yosef. Notice we have Rav Yosef underlined, and we also have a number one indicating that what he says will be changed later in light of a comment made by Abaye. Omar Rav Yosef, Keman az loho shmaitzud Rav Asi. The teaching of Rav Asi that we just heard, that Eide Mechiru Benefesh, that are Huzmu, they are not subject to being put to death, based on whom is that teaching? So the Gemara answers, Kerebi Akiva. The Omar Dovar Velo Chatzi Dovar. It would sound like he's saying halacha based on Rabbi Kiva's teaching that only for a complete unit of information is it considered testimony, but half units of information are not considered testimony. Omar le Abaye. So Abaye says back, Di'i kirabona neherogin. He says with a tone of wonderment. And Rav Asi's statement that if it had been in line of the Rabbanan, they would have been put to death. That's not true. Ha mitoch komar. There was an explanation that accompanied Rav Asi's comment that since the defendant has a way out, there is no capital case whatsoever. So the Eide Mechira testified about a case that never would have led to a death penalty. As we said, the defendant himself had a way out. Elo, afilu tema rabbonon. That which Rav Asi said works out according to the rabbonon as well, not just according to Rabbi Kiva, but even according to the rabbonon that hold a chatzi dover is considered a unit of testimony. What Rav Asi said works out according to the rabbonon. Ubedelo asu eide geneva, as we explained before, given a situation where there were no eide geneva. There were no previous witnesses testifying about a kidnapping. All you had was witnesses testifying about a sale. Well, the Gemara asks, well, Ihochi Maila Memro. If that be the case, then it seems to be very obvious that if there's just witnesses concerning a sale, of course there's no death penalty. It's because the defendant could very easily say, sure, I did sell someone, I sold my slave. What's the chiddush? Lo tzricha. No, there is a chiddush here. There is a novel legal element that has to be revealed. The afagav de asu levasof. Even though, after these witnesses that testified about the sale, there come in witnesses that testify about a kidnapping. So that we have information that could lead to a capital case. The Gemara asks ve'akati ma'ila memra, but still. It's very obvious that the Eide Mechira are not going to be put to death, because when they testified, there were no Eide Geneva around, so when they were testifying, they didn't know that there was no knowledge of a kidnapping, and there was still room for the defendant to say, yes, I sold my slave. Rashi points out underneath the Gemara, "V'akati mai lemeimra kishiido rishonim lo yahadin roi ligomer alpiem." When the first witnesses, and in this case, the first witnesses testify were the witnesses of the sale, then this particular case was not of a capital nature. V'cholim lomar lo hayinu yodim shavo eide geneva aleinu. They could have said, "We didn't know that witnesses telling about a kidnapping would come in eventually." The Gemara answers, lo tzricha. The case still does need to be taught. Dekama ramzi remuzi. They were making signs to one another. In other words, when the witnesses testifying about the sale opened up the case, they opened up the testimony with their testimony that they saw so-and-so sale, sell somebody, the witnesses that that were going to testify afterwards about the Geneva already made signs and gestures to the Eide Mechira that they were going to testify about a kidnapping. They didn't say anything, but they made gestures. So Ma'u Detema Remiza Milsihi, you might have thought that the gestures constitutes a real act of consequence. And if that be the case, then when they testified about the sale, they did have knowledge about the kidnapping. Komashmalon Remiza Lav Klumhu. The chidush of this particular halacha is that these gestures is of no legal significance. The Mishnah now turns to the case of the rebellious scholar, rebellious sage, the Zokein Mamre. So the Mishnah says, Zokein Mamre al pi Beis Din. The Zokein Mamre comes about because he is arguing with the Beis Din. Shenemar ki pole mimcho davor lamishpot. Shlosha bote dinim hoyusham. There were three courts in Yerushalayim. This, of course, is a situation where the discussion concerning these three courts is after you had the sage in his community arguing with the majority. The local Beis Din would come together with this particular sage to Yerushalayim. And now the Mishnah tells us that there were three courts. Echod Yoshev al Pesach Harabayis, the Echod Yoshev al Pesach Hazar. One sat at the entrance to the Temple Mount. The other one sat at the entrance to the Temple Courtyard. The Echod Yoshev Belishkas Agozis, and one sat in the Lishkas Agozis, which was a room that was built adjacent to the Azorah itself. We have a topic heading and also structural note that accompanies this piece of Mishnah. On the side you see Nosei Eich Nase Zokei Mamre. How does a Zokei Mamre come to be? How is someone actually determined to be a Zokei Mamre? And the Mivneh, we have this bowtie marking Shlovim, stages Hufasam Bifnei Bote Dinim Hashonim Behadroga, their appearance in front of the different courts in succession. So it is as follows. Boyin Loze Sha'al Pesach Harbayis. The dissenting scholar and the local court come to the court, come with their argument to the court at the entrance to the Temple Mount, the Omer, and he says, Kach Dorashti V'Kach Dorshu Chaverai. Thusly I claimed, the sources were saying, and thusly they, Kach Limadati V'Kach Lindu Chaverai, and thusly I taught, and thusly they taught, presenting both sides. Im Shamu, if that particular court had heard about this issue, about whatever issue they were arguing about, Omrim Lahem, then they would tell, they would state what the tradition is. The Imlav, if they had not heard a tradition on that particular matter, so they would continue to the next court. The Imlav, Boyin Lohen Le'oisan Sha'al Pesach Hazorah. The Omer, Kach Dorashti, V'Kach Dorshu Chaverai. Kach Limadati, V'Kach Limdu Chaverai. Im Shamu, Omar Lahem, or Omrim Lahem. If they had a tradition on this, so that court, the ones that are Pesach Hazorah, would say what the tradition is. V'imlav, elu v'elu boyin lebeisin ha'godol shebelishkas ha'gozis. If not, then they would all come to the great court, the Sanhedrin ha'godol, that sat in the lishkas ha'gozis. That was a, as we mentioned before, a special room that was adjacent to the base, to the Azorah. Shemimenu yotzei Torah l'chol Yisrael. From there, all decisions that needed to be decided upon were decided. Shenemar u'min ha'mokom ahu asher yivchar Hashem. From that place, from the chosen place, there came forth all rulings. Chozar l'iro, shana v'limeid, b'derech shel limeid. If the dissenting scholar goes back to town and was not mekabel, didn't accept what they ruled in the Beis HaMikdash, and went back and taught whatever he originally taught, potter, he's still exempt. However, if not only does he teach over what he said, but he also issues a legal ruling to act accordingly, that's hoira lasos, a ruling to act upon what he's claiming, what his original claim that he's still maintaining, then chayav. Shenemar v'isha sher ya'aseh bezodon. Eino chayav ad sheyore la'asos. The emphasis is the action, the ruling to act upon my opinion. Talmud shehore la'asos poter. A Talmud, someone who himself is not yet capable of ruling, because he is still young, he still hasn't learned enough years, and he issues a dissenting opinion and rules to follow what he is saying in contradiction to the Sanhedrin, he is exempt, because he wasn't in the game in the first place. Nimsa chumro kulo. It turns out that which is restrictive, namely that he shouldn't be a judge, he's not fit to be a judge, kulo is actually serves as a point of leniency for him, in that this spares him from becoming a zokein mamre. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.